We're going to chat about Windows 10 development using the Office 365 APIs. I'm really excited about the session, particularly today, because just this very morning in New York City at the Connect event, there were a heap of fantastic Office announcements. I'm not going to go through all of them today, but I did swap out one of the demos for a new version of the Graph demo this morning. So we'll see how that gets on, but it was definitely worth doing. It's not as pretty as it might be, but it does demonstrate a bunch of very cool stuff that got announced today. So we're going to cover off a few things. We're going to start off with, he said, clicking the button. A little introduction to Universal Projects and why this sort of stuff works, how the Office 365 integration stuff works. And we talked yesterday, if you were at my... Who was at the two Office sessions yesterday? A few people? Yeah, so we talked yesterday a bit about the two different types of Office development we do. Well, I'll discuss that a little bit again today, so for those who didn't cover it. And then we'll look at how you pull stuff out of it, why you pull stuff out of Office and put it into your own application, and how to do it. And the particular we're going to be doing at the how to do it piece, because the why bit is probably more of an introductory session. This is supposed to be a bit more of a deep dive session about how to get it done. Okay. So the vision for Office development is threefold. We want to be able to extend our Office applications. And we talked about this yesterday, how we build new bits that go inside the Office clients to make the Office clients better or stronger or faster or more efficient or whatever it is we need to do. We basically bring the context that people need into the document that they're using or the document or the context they're using when they're in Office. So we put additional information into Excel or Word or PowerPoint or probably most commonly Outlook. So you get an Outlook email, you can get more information about that email without having to go out of Outlook. Yeah, very, very neat. So that's what we talked about yesterday. Today we're going to talk much more about the concept of connecting to Office 365 services. Now, Office 365 is a fantastic platform at the back end for making use of the great work that the Office services team have already done. So if you're going to write an application that needs to do some sort of calendaring, you'd be crazy to write that stuff yourself, because there's already an awesome calendaring system in Exchange Online. If you're going to write an application that needs to do real-time collaboration through text and voice and video, you wouldn't write that stuff yourself. You'd hook in to the Skype for Business pieces. If you're going to write a system that takes advantage of a back-end that stores files, allows people to collaborate on those files and do versioning control and those sorts of things, well, most of that work, lots of that work's already been done in OneDrive for Business. Yeah, so being able to take advantage of that, working out when people are online, all those sorts of things, in your application is really, really key. So there's a system we built a little while ago for use in an outpatient clinic in the healthcare system in the US, where they have a set of franchises of these outpatient clinics, and they have a central repository for their patient information. They have a pool of doctors and specialist carers who work on various things, so they have people divided up into teams. A particular patient might have a primary carer and a bunch of peripheral carers as part of their team. And the system we wrote was a customized system that allowed people to do calendaring, so they could make appointments for the doctors and the other various paramedical people. They could do a real-time collaboration. So if someone was in a consult with a particular patient and they needed to go and quickly chat to this person's cardiologist, they could see whether they're online, immediately start a conversation with them, and then switch across to voice or video if they needed to as well as part of that conversation. They kept all their patient notes in Office 365 at the back end and of course they could put all the permissions they needed to do on that to make sure that these things were kept securely and only accessed by the people who had allowed to have access to them. They had an email system that was completely reliant on Exchange Online at the back end or the Office 365 pieces at the back end. And the bit they wrote was the bit that tied it all together. Yeah, they had a place to go and get medical imagery from and bring it in. They had a place they could go and they wrote some really neat stuff around marking up and sharing medical imagery when they were doing a consult. For example, they might have done an echocardiogram or a CT scan or whatever it happened to be, and they could use inking on those images to do this consultation process and to explain things to the patient. They could project stuff up on a screen inside the consult room so they could quickly have that conversation with their patients and with other doctors. So they took advantage of these great services at the back end and added value on top. And we call that connecting your app to the services. So we have this concept of extending the existing Office apps and then writing your own app and connecting it to services. Yeah, very, very cool. Now, of course, the other key pillar that we talk about when we talk about Office development is the fact that we're an open platform. And Microsoft is very much moving to this devices and services world. You know, very much about the ability for you to use our services from any platform. So whether you're writing .NET, whether you're writing iOS stuff, whether you're writing with Xamarin, whether you're building in PHP or Rails, whatever it happens to be, we want you to be able to use our services. And so we've done an enormous amount of work to make it as available as possible to do those things. This is the other slide that we show all the time about this when we talk about extend and connect. So you know, the extend piece on there on the left, where you're putting bits, where it's all about the users and how they're using things, and they put bits inside the Office clients. And on the right-hand side, it's where you connect to the other services from whatever app you're writing. That's just another way of looking at the same slide we showed a second ago. But I do think this one kind of clarifies, or at least simplifies how these things work and makes a distinction between them. So let's talk a bit about why the Universal Windows Platform. So previously, in Windows, this is what happened. You know, we had a number of different non-concurrent paths. So Xbox 360 and Windows Phone 7.5 all kind of came into the Windows line at Windows 8. They converged at least one level at the kernel level. That kept going. In Windows 8.1, the app model started to converge, which was pretty neat. And by the time we got to Windows 10, Xbox had come into the fold as well, and they're all based on the same set of, code. Of course, in addition to that, we've got the IoT stuff. We're Windows and devices. We have a completely unified core, one platform, and the idea eventually is one store, and we're getting pretty close to that. That's very, very neat. Now, that's great for users because they understand how this stuff, they're starting to understand how this stuff works, but it's even better for us as developers because as developers, being able to build on one platform, with one set of code is very, very important. Yeah, because we certainly don't want to have multiple code paths, not just because it takes a lot longer to write that code, but also now we've got to maintain it, keep feature parity up, do testing on it, and all those sorts of things. So it actually multiplies our workload by a fair amount to have multiple code paths. So if we can keep this in a single code base, targeting multiple devices, then that's a very, very powerful technique. And that's the promise of the Windows Universal Platform. So here we've got this idea of these families of devices. So we've got this universal platform having devices and IoT. We've got mobile. We've got the traditional PC. But then we have these holographic devices that Rocky Heckman's been talking about lots in the last week or two because that's his gig with HoloLens. We've got the idea of the console and things like the Surface Hub. And so we go from these tiny little hand-sized devices, which many of you will have seen already in the Maker Den. If you haven't been to the Maker Den, go and check it out and do a little Windows Universal project down there. Through to the big Surface Hub devices, and of course, in addition to that, there's a whole bunch of things around the outside with where you're writing for the server and so on as well, all using the same platform. Yeah, this is where all this stuff works. So these include a whole bunch of capabilities that you just get out of the box as part of the platform. So this user interface. The idea of the various natural user inputs with pen and voice and touch and those sorts of things. The idea of SDKs that plug in to the same development tools, the single store, and of course your existing code all just you can bring it along, particularly if you've done a good job architecting your existing code. But every form factor is different, and so we do a bunch of tuning for these things. So if you happen to have a devices. An IoT application, a little controller board, then you're going to want to be able to handle the general purpose input-output, the GPIO stuff. And so there's an IoT SDK that goes along with it. We've got experiences that make sense on the Xbox in terms of the shell. We've got experience that makes sense on a mobile device or a PC that are different from time to time. So we need some way of handling all that. And one of the ways that we do it is we have this concept of adaptive UI, or UX we call it now, user experience. So here's Skype running on exactly the same code running on a phone and on the PC. Notice we've done some things slightly differently though. We've laid the screen out differently because it makes more sense to do that. We've got we've changed the aspect ratios of some of the controls. This is all done for you adaptively. Now, depending on whether you've written the control or we've written the control, it's also all done for you automatically. If you write the control, then you have to do that automatic bit yourself. But you know, we've done a lot of this work, and there's a heap of controls that are specifically designed to render the same information in different ways on different devices, and to adapt, you know, with the same code base and with the same bindings to look good in various places. So it doesn't just have to be putting things in different places either. So here's the universal Windows application of Outlook with a calendar. And it's actually rendered a completely different way on the two devices. On the phone, it only makes sense to put certain information in front of you, and on the PC screen or the laptop screen, it makes more sense to have it laid out differently. So again, these are choices you can make as developers, or they're choices you can make have the system make for you if you choose the pre-built controls. But this is what this universal Windows Universal project is all about. Now, the other thing that has made a big difference is this: what a universal project in Windows 8.1 used to look like. You'll notice that we've got all of the lovely projects there inside a solution. So we have that one is. Oops, sorry. We'll go back one. Sorry, and I'll do that and actually turn inking on. Pen. That one is a Windows project. This one is a Windows Phone project, and this one's sort of a common project down the bottom here. So. That's the traditional way of doing it, and we had to actually. What you strove to do is put as much as possible in the shared project down the bottom, and as little code as possible in the other projects. But you still had to worry about things like UI and so on. What we've done now in Windows 10 is it's a single binary. So this is a single project now. This Windows Universal project. If this is the project there, and we can have multiple views if we want to. They can live inside the one project. They don't have to. We can have single views that use these adaptive controls to make life easier and to make things work better. All right. So, what's the Universal Windows platform? At its core, and again, I'm not going to spend a heap of time on this because you know, there are plenty of other places where this has been covered. But at its core, it's a bunch of contracts and extensions. Where you target the platform, not the actual operating system. And so it doesn't really matter which operating system is running on which operating system the platform's running on. As long as you're targeting the platform, we'll take care of all the rest, which makes a big difference. So in this particular case, this is a fairly old slide, so it's targeting 10.10069. We're up to bigger numbers than that now. I think the last one we saw was even bigger than 240 now. There's a more recent one than that. But you'll see what happened here is you've got a minimum version number and a max version tested here, but it's all just about all about the platform. Then on top of the platform, we have a bunch of different SDKs that are specific to the particular APIs for the particular things that platform does. We've got SDKs for each of the families. We've got SDKs for mobile, which handles all the stuff like phone calls and those sorts of things. We've got SDKs for devices, the IoT devices, which handle all the stuff like general purpose input, output. We've got SDKs for Xbox, which handle you know, game controllers and all of the Xbox related things. And so on and so on and so on. And bringing those in, you no longer have to work out whether your device handles a particular thing. What you can do is check whether the current version of the platform that's running supports what you're doing. And you can do that there are callbacks to do exactly that. So you can say, in your code, you can say, do you support the contract that has general purpose input output? If you do, I'll run this code. You don't have to worry about, hey, has the device I'm currently running got this particular bit of hardware? It's all about whether that contract's supported on this particular version of the platform. And so it abstracts away a lot of the complexity that you would have to do to go and you know find out specific things about hardware, which is very, very nice. All right. So that's a very, very quick introduction to Windows Universal Platform. There's heaps more great information about it, about UWP, which I'd strongly encourage you to peruse. But I wanted to sort of set that scene about where the UWP sits and how we use it. And then, well, let's talk now much more about what you would do with Office 365. So if you want to use Office 365 with your Windows Universal application, Universal Windows Platform application, what you really want to do is make sure that your users can connect and use their identity to go and get information from their Office 365 services. So you're assuming that your users have got an Office 365 account, which is why we're kind of using the Windows 10 platform to talk to the Office 365 services in the first place. And then what we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, in my application, I want to be able to go and find out about this user. In this application, I want to go and find out about this user's mail, or this user's files, or this user's events, or this user's status online status, and so on. And I want to be able to get that and set that. I want to read it and write it. I want to be able to make sure that we can display it in a way that makes sense for my application. So the way we do that is essentially we go through this process of adding a connected service. So I'll show you where this lives inside the inside in Visual Studio in a moment when we do a demo. But basically, the Add Connected Services wizard in the Office 365 tooling, particularly in Visual Studio 2015, is a phenomenal time saver. You can actually do all the things that the Add Connected Services wizard does. You can do it yourself. It's possible to do it, just like it's possible to pull out your own teeth. It's not a lot of fun. Yeah? So the Add Connected Services wizard goes and registers the application in the Azure Active Directory that every Office 365 tenant has as a back end. It does a bunch of stuff around configuring your app.xaml file to include the client ID. It does a lot of work around bringing the authentication pieces into the application. It adds a whole heap of NuGet packages that allow you to go and do that communication. And of course, it does all that for you, and then shows you the project, which is pretty cool. And the nice thing about the Add Connected Services is it's re-entry, it's re-entrant, so you get to run it again if you need to make changes. It also sets all the permissions you need. So if your application needs permissions to do, I don't know, let's say reading and writing a calendar, and needs permissions to do to work on the user's email, then you can set that in the Add Connected Services wizard, and goes and sets up all those permissions at the back end for you. In the Azure Active Directory application. It also creates a data source and allows you, a lot like Entity Framework, to have a context and a bunch of strongly typed classes that come back. And so you can use those. You can use that information that comes back from the various calls you make to put into a view model, and then use that strongly typed object to bind to XAML. And the XAML binding stuff is just a wonderful. It's, I don't know, who is a web developer mainly? And who is mainly a XAML developer? Web developers again? I'm really sorry. XAML developers? You guys are awesome. No, sorry. I've been a .NET and client-side, WinForms, WPF, Silverlight. thanks, Steve. Before that, Fox Pro guy, all my life, pretty much. And you know, every time I go and start doing web development, which I've got to do a lot of at the moment because lots of Office Dev is now web dev, I pull my hair out about how difficult it is to do binding and move stuff around. So I love the fact that the Windows 10 stuff, particularly, we're talking about, still very XAML and binding based. I feel like I can be really productive really quickly. I'm finding ways in the web world to do a similar sort of thing. The various frameworks around things like Aurelia and Angular make things a bit easier and a bit better. But I still love my strongly typed world. This stuff in Windows 10 makes it, I think, a really, really powerful and compelling argument for keeping that sort of way of doing things around. And then the next thing we do is we create a client that is stateful and allows our login and consent to be persisted as part of the application's lifecycle. Not even just while the application's running, because we use the Active Directory authentication libraries, which have got a whole bunch of capabilities for storing and protecting tokens and storing and protecting logins. We have the ability to persist logins even through reboots and so on. And in fact, you'll see when I run my demo, if I want to re-authenticate, I actually have to uninstall my application so I can get out, so I can get it to re-authenticate me because it does such a good job of storing my creds. There you go. I guess I could have put a sign out button on there as well. All right, so how do we go about adding these connected services? Well, the first thing we do is we go into our project and we right-click on the project we want to connect, and we choose the Add Connected Services wizard. I'm going to show you this in the demo as well, so I'll kind of skip through these slides pretty quickly. It basically then says, well, what services do you want? You can see here that we need to tell it which tenant we're going to connect to. By the way, tip for young players, if you're doing Office 365 dev and you're using a developer tenant, and I'll tell you how to get one of those at the end, I strongly recommend that you splurge on the $5 or $6 for 2 years worth of a custom domain, get a shorter one as possible, and just connect that custom domain to your developer tenant, because the number of times you're going to have to type in your credentials, you're going to find that $5 or $6 money really well spent when you only have to type in 6 or 7 letters to log in, or 10 letters to log in, as opposed to 35 letters to log in when you actually end up with the codesy.onmicrosoft.com domain, which is going to, or the myworkaccount.onmicrosoft.com domain, with the, every time you type that, every time you log in. So adding that little, I'll show you an example of that when we do it here. But adding that little one makes a big difference. You go through and you tell it what the tenant is. You go and you connect up to a particular. You get a client ID, which you're going to put into your application. In fact, it gets put into your application automatically. And then you go and set the various permissions for the things that you want to be able to access. And in the background, this is doing is it's going connecting to Azure Active Directory using the credentials that you type in when you're in step two there. Using those credentials, it goes into Azure Active Directory and configures all of the bits and pieces that you would normally have to go and do manually. Yeah. So as I said, this is a big time saver. It also installs, as I said, a bunch of NuGet packages for you. You'll see these come in here, the data stuff, all the Office 365 connectivity pieces, the Active Directory client pieces that make it all really easy to work with. And the NuGet stuff is quite interesting, I think. I find myself spending a lot of time updating NuGet packages, as you do. But it seems really worthwhile because it's a great way of keeping up to date with the latest versions of libraries and so on. So I would strongly encourage you to get into that habit. Of course, if you're going to connect to Office 365, you have to do authentication. And the authentication pieces for Office 365 are all Azure Active Directory, because that's what Office 365 uses behind the scenes. And Azure Active Directory uses standard protocols. It uses OAuth. It uses a bunch of standard consent dialogues. And there are a couple of different wrappers you can wrap around. In fact, there are probably 3 different wrappers you can wrap around the Azure Active Directory authentication you use for Office 365. There's a web account manager, which basically allows you to authenticate against a bunch of different resources, but it's not quite as as flexible in terms of the various authentication flows as the web authentication broker. Behind the scenes, they do similar sorts of things in terms of being able to go and get tokens and bring them back and call those use the tokens to get access to resources. But it's definitely worthwhile having a think about what your application does, and there's some great resources on the dev.office.com site that'll help you make this decision about which one of these you want to use. All right, so we've got to the stage where we want to create an application. Let's switch across and see what that might look like. There we go. I'm just going to get number 6. I'm going to start Visual Studio, which I should have done before I started the application. I've already started one instance of it. We'll see how we go with that. And I want to quickly show you what the flow looks like to go and add the connected services. So I'm going to create a new project. It's a Windows, I'm just going to blank, Windows Universal Project. I keep my Keep Forever folder. Dev, what are we, 335 UWP. That'll do. I'm not going to add it to source control. Excellent. Standard Windows Universal Windows Project. Here it comes. Dom-de-dom-de-dom-de-dom. And let's go into Solution Explorer here, slowly. Did I say add a, right. I've added Application Insights as well, isn't that cool? By the way, I didn't mean to do that, but if you haven't had a play with Application Insights, very, very cool stuff if you're writing Windows, Universal Windows projects, whether they're for mobile or for desktop or for whatever. And just recently, we've included the ability in the store dashboard to surface your Application Insights directly in that dashboard rather than having to go off to a separate place. So if you put a Universal project in the store which happens to have the Application Insights stuff installed, then the telemetry from that will get surfaced for you inside the dashboard of the store. Very, very cool. Just an aside. All right, so now I've got this this project. I want to make it a connected application, so I just right-click on the project. I'm going to add a connected service. And in this particular case, I'm going to add the Office 365 APIs. I'm going to hit configure. So what it's going to ask me now is what domain do you want to log into? So Coachy.net is the name of my domain, rather than the long on Microsoft.com, yeah? Yeah, so at the moment, the way this is set up is that we're connecting to a single tenant, but you can decide that you can make the application a multi-tenant application, and then but then if you do that, this wizard's not going to do it for you. You're going to have to tell those tenants how to go and add those applications to their directory. Yes, yes. So that you, then you set it up as a multi-tenant application, and they've got to install the app then and have that as part of their process. All right. So this is probably not going to even get me to log in because I've logged in this one before. It's authenticating me. Beautiful. It's successfully authenticated me. Normally, if I had not logged into this domain before, it would pop up a dialog. It says, "Do you want to create a new Azure Active Directory application, or have you got an existing one? If you've got an existing one, it can go and configure that for you. And if this is a subsequent time that I run this wizard, that will already have pre-configured the stuff that I've run here. But this is a new one, so I'm going to say next. And now it's going to say, okay, well, I'm going to go and register that application, and then you're going to be able to set your permissions. So here in the calendar, I want to be able to read this guy's calendar, whoever's logged in calendar. I want to be able to write to their contacts. I'm going to be able to send mail as that person. I don't want to do anything with their files, but I do want to be able to access the directory as the person who's logged in and sign them in and read their profile. If I hit finish there, what's going to happen is on Azure Active in the Azure Active Directory backend, all of that configuration stuff will be done for me, and there'll be a bunch of stuff going to my app.xaml file around the client ID and all those things that need to happen as well. It'll also install a whole heap of those NuGet packages for me. So that makes things really straightforward. So that's how you do the Add Connected Services wizard. I'm just going to let that run. We'll duck back to some slides and have a chat about a couple other things. All right. So how do we go about doing this communication? Back to the Office 365 stuff. Well, we get a token that allows us to communicate with Exchange or SharePoint or whatever we need. And then, in fact, so we can have a number of different endpoints that we can use to go and authenticate against. By default, with Office 365, originally at least, there was an endpoint for pretty much 10 different services. Calendar, mail, the stuff around everything, so all the SharePoint bits, all of the things for Skype for Business, each of those had a different endpoint. And we used this thing called a discovery service that allowed us to go and find out what the endpoint was for this particular user, because not only do we need to know whether we were talking to this person's calendar, but we needed to know where this person's calendar lived. And so we actually had to go and call to a service and say, I want to tell me what the endpoint is for this but currently logged in user's calendar. And we'd get a response back, and we could use that response to go and get a token for that endpoint and send it off. What we've done more recently is we've introduced this concept of a unified API. And this was the thing that was made generally available this morning, and I'm going to show you a demo of it in a minute, where the unified API has a single endpoint, graph.microsoft.com. And then from there, behind the scenes, and you authenticate against that endpoint. And from there behind the scenes, we handle all of the discovery and moving around to go and get the various pieces out of the other parts of the other endpoints. But there's that single layer on top that you as a developer need to log into. Now, there are a couple of things to note about the graph.microsoft.com or the unified API. The first thing is that it is inevitably going to be a subset of the platform specific the platform specific endpoints. So there are almost always going to be new things in the email or the calendar or the Skype piece that haven't yet surfaced in the unified API. So you need to be a little bit careful that if you want to use those brand new things, that you might still need to go off and use the discovery service to go and find out what the endpoint is for emailing and call that stuff. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that just until recently, it was still not released. Although today, this morning, it's now generally available, and V1, the V1 endpoint is now out there. There's still a beta endpoint, by the way, which is what we're using to get ready for the next version. There's a bunch of stuff still in preview. If you want to know what's in preview and what's generally available in the Office world, there's a great site, office.com/roadmap, will tell you what's been announced, what's been released into preview, what's been released into general availability, and what's been cancelled of the things that we've announced. And probably also, at least to some extent, links to the timeframe for those, and certainly links to all the blogs from the product teams about this stuff as they get released. So a great resource. office.com/roadmap is a great resource for working out where you're at. And depending on what your appetite for risk and change is, you can decide whether you're going to take dependency on things that are currently in preview or whether you're only ever going to take a dependency on things that are generally available. And if you want to get a definitive answer about what is GA and what's been announced and what's in preview, then that's the place to go. All right, so this might be one way that you sort out a new Exchange client a token. Once you've got these things, then the SDK has got a bunch of objects. It's basically, most of them, as it says here, are enumerable of T. By the way, that's what I think, there's a thing they really missed out on. These awesome dev.office.com mugs. I'm going to give this away later on. But I reckon that you should just say cup T. In the generic cup of tea, you know. All right, that's just me. These things, pretty much like the Entity Framework, all of these objects have got standard CRUD operators on them. So you can create, read, update, and delete based on these things and send sync calls back and forward to do that. I'm going to show you that in the demo in a minute. All right, so this is the new demo that I just pulled down this morning. So let's switch back across to 6. By the way, this page here came up automatically once I'd run the Add Connected Services wizard. So we quickly push you across to some more information about how to get these things going. I'm just going to close that one for now. And I'm going to close this application as well. But you can see that we've got a bunch of the Office 365 directory is added back in here and a bunch of other things, a bunch of service references and so on. So I'm just going to close this one as well. This is the one we just created. No, don't need to save it. Bye-bye. All right. Now, full disclosure, the demo I'm about to show you, I didn't write, because the stuff was only released this morning. I pulled it down from this awesome, awesome repository called github.com/officedev, and this particular one is a repo called Office 365, UWP, Microsoft Graph Snippets. But there's a heap of them. I'll duck back up one level, and you can see all the stuff that's going on up here. This is probably one of the coolest things about the way the Office developer engineering team are doing things at the moment. All of their stuff is going up on GitHub, not just these great samples. So you can see here that 2 hours ago, there was one about the using Office 365 with Android. 3 hours ago, there was a bunch of documentation. So all the docs are being created up here. You can submit pull requests to the documentation for the Office 365 developer docs, which is awesome. 8 hours ago, there was a thing on VBA content. Any VBA developers in the room? Yep, okay. I think there's a therapy session afterwards. I think VBA is awesome. The Yeoman generator updated 7 hours ago. So if you're a if you're an Office developer, if you have people in your office or in your team who are non-Windows and non-Visual Studio developers, they can just go to a command prompt if they've got Yeoman installed, type Yo Office, and boom, they get asked a couple of questions, and they've got a fully scaffolded Office add-in project up and running that they can edit in Sublime and push up to the Office store without ever going to Visual Studio. A bunch of deployment scripts, some cool stuff around Android SDK, iOS SDK for Outlook, managed API for Exchange Web Services, the Office UI Fabric. If you're doing any Office dev at all, if you want your application to look like an Office application, then use the Office UI Fabric, because it is a bunch of controls and styles that make your application look like Office, because that's what we use to make Office look like Office. Yeah, so the Office UI Fabric is what you want to use for that. Very, very cool. But as I said, there's a heap of great stuff here. I'm still on page one of many. But the one I've got here, I'm going to find it by, is these graph snippets, the Office 365 UWP graph snippets. Updated 9 hours ago now, so you know it's getting a bit old. We didn't make it to the first page. And there's some, you know, a heap of great samples. I've just cloned the repo. I'm going to show it to you in a sec. Some great documentation, exactly how to get it up and running. Additional resources. This is a treasure trove of information up here on the office.com, sorry, github.com/officedev GitHub report account. Definitely check this stuff out. So as I said, I've cloned it. We're in here. In fact, I wonder if I can still get to it from here. There we go. This is the cloned repo. It's just got a fairly simple solution in here. I've opened it up in Visual Studio. I've run through a couple of things to configure it to make sure it's configured for my application. I've run the connected services wizard to make sure it's connected to my tenant at the back end. And if I run this up now, I'll show you what it looks like, and then I'll stop it and we'll talk about what's going on. This is just a series of little snippets that do single things. So they've broken it up into three groups, things called group, organization, and users. And there's a bunch of different things you can do with each of those groups. So in fact, let's see if I can just make a bit more space. Users, you can go and get the user that's logged in. You can go and find out all the users that are in the directory. You can create a new user. You can go and get the user's drive details. You can find the events the user has got in their calendar. You can create an event, update an event, delete an event, and so on. We'll go and get messages and send messages. Find out who the person's manager is. All this stuff is through the Graph API. And if you haven't played with the Graph API, there's definitely some great great videos. Ina Aeneas, I always get her surname slightly wrong, but she's the program manager for the Graph API, for the Unified API. She's done some great talks on Channel 9 about the Graph API itself, and basically explains how the system works, where you can navigate from the context of the user that's logged in through to the files they own, through to the people who report to them, to the people they report to the documents they're working on, through the things that are trending around them, through the events that they're created, through the groups that they belong to, through the other people who are in the groups they belong to, and so on, simply by navigating through a RESTful hierarchy, RESTful network of information. So if you go to the endpoint and say slash me So you, graph.microsoft.com/me, then that's the currently logged in user, and it returns a piece of JSON about that particular user, as long as they're logged in and they have, you know, you've got permission to do it. If you say /me/manager, then it returns a different object for the manager of that user out of the Active Directory, and so on and so on and so on. So in this particular case, I'm just going to get out of here, and we'll look at some of the way this works. Each of these little tiles, I can select or deselect and have them run at any particular time. But I'm going to show you how that works in just a sec. So the way this is set up, we go to Solution Explorer. We have the page itself is very, very basic, just a Universal Windows Project page that hosts a control in which a bunch of tiles, a hub control in which a bunch of tiles live. And the tiles are basically representations of the stories, these little snippet stories that you can use. So if I go into the users snippets, the users folder here, and look at the user snippets, this is where we are at the moment. I can go and there's a task that says get me async. And what that does is it's going to find who the current user is. And so it creates a new client, goes and gets the token, goes and passes it across as part of the call, makes an HTTP call. In this particular case, we're doing REST directly, although we don't have to. We could use the SDK to do this. Makes a REST call directly. And the reason I think we're not using the SDK with this particular demo, I haven't had this confirmed, but the SDK hasn't yet been updated with a new version of the graph. And they're using a new version of the graph in this demo. We can go make a call, and then we can go and pull that information back from the JSON object that comes back and put it out to the debug window. So let's see how that might work. I'll run this up. So I'm going to hit the Get Me button here. And what we'll say is that this when I run this, the first thing that's going to happen is it's going to work out whether I'm logged in. And because I'm not logged in, bam, it pops up a authentication dialog for me. And the one it chooses to pop up here is this the look like this. There are a number of other ways you can do this, as I explained. So ac@codec.net. That is so much better than typing the big long one. I think I've made that point. And I sign in. And what's going to happen is it's going to go off and call it. It's gone green. It doesn't look like much has happened, but if we go back to our debug window, debug windows output, it's gone and actually got me out of the back end. So that's coolish, yeah, all right. So I managed to go and find out who I am. Everyone's excited, right? Yeah. Someone wants a t-shirt, I can tell. Steve Price wants a t-shirt. Yeah, okay. That's cool. Let's see what else we can do. So I'm going to pop into, this is the, I'm logged in as me here. I'll look at my, yeah, so here's who I am, ac@codec.net. That's who I'm logged in as. I've got a bunch of, I've got a calendar here. So let's see if I can add an event to the calendar. So there's a couple of events down here at 7:30, right? You can see two of those. Let's see what we can do. So I go back here, and I'm going to create an event. I'm going to just make sure that I haven't got that one selected still. I'm going to hit a create event. I'll run this. We'll go back to Visual Studio to see what happens. We should get a notification in the output window in a moment. There we go, created this event. Great. Just to prove we've created it, there it is. There are now three in that particular spot. You could tell that I hadn't deleted the ones I was testing with before, right? Awesome. That's cool, though, right? We've now gone from a Windows 10 project. We've reached out into someone's calendar directly, and we can start pushing stuff into it. We can start taking stuff out of it. If I open this event, you'll see it's got a bunch of cool information in it. This is the one I just created. Not only has it got me, it's got an attendee that's required. It's got some body text in here, which is pretty neat. Let's go and have a look at the code that created that, and I'll show you how easy that is to do. Get out of there. We want create event async. So So the creative and async's really pretty easy. Again, we get a token. We add our token to the HTTP call, and then we just say, here's the body, and the body is just a bit of JSON. There's a subject, a location. It's going to be at the water cooler. So this object here, we have a display name, but it could also have an email address if it was a particular resource. We can chuck that in there. Who's got to come? Well, we've got the required people who've got to come, and here's the details about the person who is the required person. Remember, they turned up in there. When is it? In this particular case, it's 2014. I'm not sure why it's 2014. Let's make it 2015 and see if we can put another one in there. It ends in 2015 as well. And so on. It's in UTC in this particular case, but it doesn't have to be. We could put whatever we like in there. Dev3, status updates, blocking issues and next steps, because there's always going to be some of them. I'll save this now. We'll rerun this application. Did I run it? No, let's run it. Notice, by the way, it's not going to ask me to log in again. Did it run? What's going on? Build failed. Excellent. I had this issue before as well. Here's what I did to fix it. The really useful thing that was, it told me build failed, but there was no information at all in the error window or the output window about why the build failed. It just failed. Why does it think I'm here? It's not 447, is it? Do you think such 440s? I think for some reason we're in Adelaide. Yeah, I wonder whether, because I had it set on automatic, I wonder whether there was something weird about. Okay, so it's no longer 447, it's 417, which is much better. I was really, really worried. Gone way over time. Let's run this again and see how we go. Package restore. Looking better. That's an awesome point. So all the documentation for the graph is in that repo that I showed you before, and it's constantly kept up to date. So that's not done after the fact. That's literally where they're working to keep all those docs up to date. And if you ever find an error with that, just raise an issue in the GitHub repo and it'll get fixed really, really quickly. I think it's a sensational way of doing the docs personally. All right, so we're going to create a create event again. And we'll go back into here, and instead of December 2014, we'll go to December 2015, 1st to the 7th, 1st of December, woohoo! So we do the happy dance, dev335 status. No? All right. It's getting late in the session, isn't it? Okay, so the cool thing here is, and look, there's heaps and heaps of these snippets, and I strongly encourage you to think about what it is that you want to access, but you saw the hundreds of them that were in the demo there, and all of the code for that stuff is there in the samples, and there's heaps of other samples as well. But think about how you can really bring your application to life by taking advantage of the services that already exist in Office 365. I know a bunch of you are already. Who's doing Office 365 dev already using the services at the back end? You Fred IT guys are. Yeah, yeah, yay! That's really, really neat, I reckon. There's some very, very cool things you can do in there. And the great thing for me as a developer is that it's something I don't have to write. I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I stood on the stage in the main arena and said there are two things you want out of a good developer. You want them to be boastful and you want them to be lazy. Those are the things you want out of a great developer, because you don't want them writing stuff that they don't have to write. You want them telling the world about the cool things they're doing, but really what you want them to do is take advantage of the things that other people have already written to make things work really well. So boastful and lazy. All right, in the theme of being boastful and lazy, particularly being lazy, I've asked someone else to come and do another demo. So Jordan Knight is one of our top MVPs in Universal Windows projects, and also a real tinkerer in the space of of IoT. And so he's going to show us this fantastic application he's written using exactly the techniques that we talked about in terms of except he's not using the Graph API, I don't think, in this particular case. No, but we'll get to that in a sec. Yeah, I think you're using something else. But the cool thing is that Jordan's going to show us an application that's running on this little gadget here. I'm going to get him to explain what it is. But it's running using exactly the same type of code that I've been showing you running on the Windows platform itself. So over to JK. Thanks, man.
Project that I've been working on the side that I've built out of necessity more than anything else, and it's called the Daybar. And you can see it running here. And basically, I'm finding that I was missing a lot of appointments and meetings throughout the day just because, you know, I get really busy and all of a sudden the world goes on around me, especially when I'm developing. So what I've built is this little gadget. And basically, it takes a UWP that logs into Office 365 using a lot of the stuff that Andrew just demonstrated. And then it uses the serial port, goes through to an Arduino, which then shows my Outlook events on the bar, on the strip, throughout the day. So that way I can just have one look at the strip in the morning. I can see exactly what my day looks like, if my afternoon's full or if my morning's full. It also shows the items on the strip in the colours of the Outlook categories. So you can see there. You can see my stand-up in the morning is orange. And then there's some test events there. And if I scroll down a bit further, you can see the party there is in red at the end of the day. And right now you can see that we're partway through the office session. You might see a little green flashing dot that might be a bit hard to see from back there, but that's essentially the now point in the day. So the idea is that you can put this up in your workstation or on a whiteboard or something, and you and your team can see, you know, what your day looks like just at a glance. It's more like a clock, so it's always in the same place. You can just have a quick look and get a very good idea of what it's looking like. So the best thing is, though, is that I've actually made all the code instructions to build this thing available on GitHub. So you can go to the GitHub page there, and it gives you links to all the components you'll need to purchase, as well as instructions on how to put them together and all the code you need to get the UWP up and going, as well as installing the code on the Arduino. So what I want to do is just quickly just run through some little bits and pieces on how that works, but I'm not going to go into too much detail. Andrew's covered off most of the office stuff that that it's using anyway. So my strip cost... it was the most expensive part of the build. It's about $120, but you can probably get them a bit cheaper. And so the total project cost with Arduino and everything, the strip was about $130, $140, but I think you could probably build it for $60 or $70. Yep. So let's just quickly, I'm just going to switch over to my machine here and we'll just quickly go through some of the little bits and pieces. Cool. All right, so first up, when you download the code, you're going to have to deploy the program onto your Arduino. Now, there's a few ways you can actually do that. One of them is to use the free Arduino software, which you can just load up the code there and just deploy in that. But what I prefer to use is this. It's a paid Visual Studio plugin called Visual Micro, which means that I can do Arduino coding actually in Visual Studio and just press one button and actually deploy to the Arduino. So behind here, you can't see it, but there's a little Arduino mounted on a breadboard. It's an Arduino Nano. They're a tiny little thing, and they cost about $8. So what I'm going to do is basically, I'm just going to run that up now. So what... I've got to stop this guy first. Only one thing can use the serial port at a time. So what it does is this program, it sits there listening to the serial port, looking for commands. And when it receives a command that it can understand, it executes it. So... basically, one type of command might be command C, which will do a rainbow color on the strip. So another command might be make pixel 26 red. So then I go through in the UWP and I read out the events and I figure out where the events should be on the strip and send down commands to the Arduino through the serial port. So that's the Arduino side of things. Now, in the actual code for the UWP, which is all available there as well, there's a couple of interesting things. I'm using the Office 365 connected server, so if you load this, you will have to connect your own. And basically, that does all the heavy lifting to get the tokens out. That's the hardest part, I think, with authenticating with these systems is definitely usually the hardest part. Once you get a token, though, it's actually really easy. So if I run this up, if I run the app up there, what we'll see is after a second, the strip should reset as the system attempts to communicate with it. But also, it's just gone on to, off to Office. I've already logged in, so it's a case for my authentication. And if I have a look here at the result, I should be able to see there's actually some, this is the calendar information that I've received back from Office 365. I'm going to pop that over into Visual Studio Code because Visual Studio Code is perhaps the most fantastic text editor now. It's just went open source today as well, I see, which is pretty cool. I haven't looked at the code yet, but one of the cool things about Visual Studio Code, though, is you can do this. You can save as a file type, and then you can actually format it. So now we can read the stuff that's come back from Office. So there's quite a lot of information there. But some interesting things you can see there's categories. So that's what I'm using to actually show the different colours on the strip, as well as start and end times and things like that. So pretty much we then just take those and turn them into commands. The strip's 144 pixels long, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and we just offset by the date time of the current object, the current event. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to pop a breakpoint here, and this is us sending events down to the strip. So this command here is command B, which means light up from pixel 83. You probably can't see that very good, but it basically says B83 255 255 012. So that's light up from number 83, pixel 83 on the strip. Set the color to 255 255 0, which I think is yellow, and then do that for 12 pixels. So if I let it through, it should light up that thing on the strip. I can't actually see it. And then I'll let the rest through, and you can see my day appears on the strip there. So as I mentioned, that's all available on GitHub for you guys to go and have a look at. And please, if you've got any questions or anything like that, then contact me either through GitHub or on my email address there. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Jordan. The thing I love about this is that it really is just a Windows Universal project. That's all it is. And it just happens to use the SDKs to go and talk to the various bits and pieces. So in this particular case, Jordan's talking to the serial port. It could be talking directly to through a Raspberry Pi to, you know, to general purpose I/O ports. All that stuff is just doable as part of the same code base. And all the stuff around connecting to Office is identical because it is just Windows. Yeah, it's just the Windows code that's running. So I think that's particularly exciting. All right. Then I had a blank slide so we could do the changeover really, really smoothly. That's great. Okay, so I want to leave some time for questions, but I do want to make sure that you've thought about what it is that we've done today. We've really started to explore the concept of connecting your application to the Office 365 services. The idea is that there's a whole plethora of well-tested, very robust, hugely scalable cloud services that many, many, many people have already got access to that you can take advantage of with your applications, whether they're in-house applications, whether they're applications you're building as a commercial software vendor. The powerful thing about it is that you can take advantage of those things that are already written and then add the value that you can add by writing code as an application either in Windows or on any other platform as well. So, of course, we've only been talking about Universal Windows projects today, but there's also a bunch of stuff around iOS you could do, or Android, stuff you can do around Xamarin, various other mobile platforms, HTML. All of those platforms lend themselves to going and calling the Office services at the back end to surface inside your application, and all of those are equally possible. In fact, there are examples of all of those things in that repo, in the Office Dev GitHub account that I showed you before. So I hope we've whet your appetite with Office Dev. We've done a bunch of Office Dev stuff here at Ignite this year, starting with Ashish's session on yesterday morning, a couple of sessions yesterday evening with me, and then this one today. All of these will be available up on Channel 9, of course, for you to review. But I'm going to leave you with a couple of places you should probably go next to do some further reading. There's some great stuff around getting started with the APIs. And of course, all these slides will be available after this session, so you can download and all these links are live. Some great ideas about documentation. If you haven't already signed up for the Office 365 Developer Program, I strongly recommend that you do. And the reason we've got this great swag, which I'm going to try to find a way to give away in a moment, is courtesy of Jeremy Thake at the Office 365 the Dev Program. dev.office.com/dev program. Sign up there. Make sure you put the fact that you saw the Ignite in the comments, because that way he'll continue to send us swag to give away. By the way, is anyone here involved in an Office 365 user group of any sort, developers? Yeah. If you are, you can contact Jeremy and ask him for a box of this stuff to give away at your user group, and he'll send you one. It's fantastic. There's very cool things in there. I'll tell you how to get in touch with him in a moment. But sign up for the Dev Program. That's really, really, really cool. There are some great ways of engaging with the Office Dev team, and I'd strongly encourage you to look at all of these. We'll start in the top left with the Yammer network. If you're a Yammerite, I think that's the correct term, then jump on there and start interacting with the team there. If you're a tweeter, there's a Twitter handle. They always have people on Twitter to respond to Office Dev questions. I'm going to skip user voice for a second because it's important. I'm going to come back to it. There's a bunch of great demos on YouTube, some fantastic podcasts. Richard and Jeremy do one, but there's a bunch of others as well. So dev.office.com/podcast is a great place for that. The Channel 9 Dev Show is really important. Sonia Kotoplev, I'm sure I've butchered her name as well, but that's a tradition in the Office Dev community, interviews someone else from the engineering team or the product teams about the sort of stuff that they're doing. Gives you a really good idea about the sort of directions we're going. But the two I really wanted to call out here, well, the first one was user voice. If you've got an idea about what you want to happen in Office Dev and it doesn't yet do it, then putting that request into user voice is the most effective way of getting that information back to the product team. It's something they use every time they start doing a triage for a new backlog, for a new sprint, is they'll go to user voice and find out what the current most popular requests are. So jump on user voice. Office SP Dev for Office and SharePoint Dev. .uservoice.com is a great place to go for that. And if you have a technical question, then Stack Overflow is the place that where the Office Dev engineering team hang out the most in terms of answering technical questions. So the MS Office tag and Stack Overflow is definitely the something they monitor all the time. So those two in particular, I think, are very important engagement points to take away from here. Of course, in terms of engaging, I'd love you to evaluate this session and tell me what you think. Do that. There's always prizes available as well. Heaps more stuff you can do around the Ignite training. All of these sessions will be up on Channel 9 after the fact. I think we're looking at sort of between 2 days and a week before all of them get up there, but that's the sort of time frame we're talking about. And the Virtual Academy is a great place to be going as well. With that, I'd like to say thank you very much for being here. Enjoy the party this evening, and I'd be happy to take questions. Thank you. Yes, sir. So the CSOM stuff, I think, is going to be... It depends what sort of dev you're doing. The CSOM stuff is not going anywhere, but I think the advantage we're going to have with the Graph API stuff is that it's integrated across the entire space. So you're talking to the SharePoint piece of Office 365, but with the same endpoint, you can talk to the events, the calendar piece, and you can also talk to the mail piece, all as part of that same endpoint. And you can, the other nice thing is that it's very much user-centric. So it's all based on me or my organization rather than having to go to a platform part of the endpoint. Yeah, I think that's the answer. I don't think it's going away, but I think that there's a shift in the way people are thinking about that stuff. That's an awesome question.
That's probably an extra large.
Not making any judgments, but Oops, sorry. Yes. Is there a way of interacting with OneNote? Yes, absolutely. So with Office 365, there's a OneNote endpoint. Yeah. And I think there's a thing in the Unified API as well. Don't hold me to that. That's just coming. The graph's just come out today. Yeah.
Pretty much all the demos I've seen so far show the Graph API from the perspective of the user that's logged in.
Yep.
Are there any options for impersonating users? So I want to blast out like an event into everyone's calendar, for example.
Yep, absolutely. So it's a great question. In fact, it's a I reckon it's probably an office mug question. Well done. I'm going to throw it to you. I'll come down and answer. So yes, there are ways of doing it. The logged in user has to have rights to do it. Yeah. So you have to give rights in the application to do that. And it's one of the settings you set in the wizard. And you also have, also the user has to have rights to do that. Ashish. Awesome question, and I think it might even be a dietary diction. Thank you for asking that wonderful question, Ashish. So the question is, what about? You've been talking about Office 365. It's really important, but there are other people who don't have Office 365, but they have Office.com. They have a Microsoft account. How do we get to talk to them as well? And the cool thing is that we're starting to converge those APIs. So depending on how you log in, whether you log in with a Microsoft account or a Office 365 account. We will make different parts of the graph available or not available, but we'll go and talk. So if you go and say, get me the messages for a particularly logged in user, if you're logged in with an organizational account, an Office 365 account, we'll get the messages out of the Office 365 piece. If you're logged in with a Microsoft account, we'll go and get messages out of Outlook.com. Yeah, I think you probably deserve a t-shirt. Come and see me later, I'll get you a good one. Yeah, so that's a great question as well. It's probably also a power block. Yeah, I'm not going to throw that either, but I might bring it down. The cool thing is that there are a number of ways you can authenticate against Office 365 APIs, including using certs. And so you can have essentially a services cert that you can use to do that logging in. Yeah. Pricey. Yeah, that's an awesome question. So, t-shirt for you. Are you going to answer it for me? Is that what you're doing?
No.
Oh, you just want a t-shirt. there are a couple of answers to that. One is that the stuff I'm talking about today, we're assuming these guys have got an Office 365 account of some sort, but it doesn't have to be on a single tenant. The stuff I showed you just now was a single tenant thing, but you can do multi-tenant applications. People could choose to install your apps. You can choose to have in the Active Directory, make it a multi-tenant app, and then it can get authenticated against the a bunch of different tenants. Yeah.
I will answer
that. Okay. I think you should have a chat to Lammy afterwards. He's got all the latest blog entries and probably gets a Word Up t-shirt for that. Just pass that down to him, would you? Any more? So you mean for the ad connected service? That works for pretty much anything. Yeah, you can add it for a web application or a plain.net application as well. It's pretty cool. Yes. I've got to get rid of these. I don't want to take them home. Chuck that one up there for me, would you? Right up the orange shirt. Any more? Any more? Yeah.
Is there any way to register for events when things happen?
That's an awesome question. In fact, that is the jawbone, the jambox question of the day. I think that's what we're calling it now. I've been special sponsored by, it's an Office Dev Jambox, by the way, dev.office.com, emblazoned on the side of it. Very, very cool. You've got a mug as well. You show them very well. If you feel like donating the mug to someone else, you're welcome to. No obligation. So repeat the question for me again.
Can you register for
an
event?
Yes. So it's an awesome question. So there is, in the process at the moment, a series of event registration based on webhooks that is being rolled out. I didn't see this morning whether it got announced of being available or not, but we certainly did.
It did.
Say it again. They announced and they're in preview. Okay, good. I wasn't sure whether they'd actually been announced or not. Well, I knew we'd announced them, but I didn't know if we'd actually released them. But the idea is that you can register for a notification when things happen, like an email gets received or gets sent, or a file gets updated or whatever. It can call back into a service for you, which is fantastic. It's exactly what you want if you want to automate a bunch of processes rather than having to go and poll for whether things have changed. That's why you've got the Jambox. It's such a good question. Any more? I haven't got a lot of great things left to give, but you know, you never know. All right, folks, thanks very much for your time. Look, enjoy the party tonight, and I hope you've had a great Ignite. It's been a lot of fun putting up here. Thanks. Oh, and one more thing. Thanks so much to Jordan. What a fantastic demo, a very cool representation of what's going on.